You call the meeting to order. Okay, members, we do have a quorum, that's great. People need to be going in and out, including myself. I haven't built another committee, but I'm going to try to, I'm going to take a couple of my own provisions first so I can be sure that I can be here for them, and we'll keep on going, and hopefully we'll have a good quorum throughout. So we have House Bill 2150 before us. We've been amending it, members, and I would like to next move, just a second. Okay, just a quick recap. It's as amended, is before us, and the motion will be to renew it to pass as amended and return to finance. That'll be our motion. And if we don't finish this today, we'll recess and reconvene at 2:45 in room 200. So keep that in mind. I want to move the A16 amendment, members. So that motion now, I would move the addition of the A16 amendment to House Bill 2150 as amended. Members, what this is I have to tell you, I'm really so pleased to bring this amendment to you. I've been working on this issue for about 20 years. And this deals with an arena where I was able to get a feasibility pilot project set for the cancer surveillance system, adding occupational, residential, military history to the to a database. And we're not doing it with the state. We decided that what we could do is hopefully do it with with the Hennepin County Medical Center's cancer center, where they do have a similar cancer registry. And we will, in this pilot project, expand its existing cancer registry to include that additional data. And as it points out, the reason for doing this is to determine the feasibility of collecting this data on a statewide scale, the potential for a self-administered patient questionnaire, and the necessary qualifications for staff who will collect this data. And we will be taking the money from, not what it says in the first page, but I have an amendment to that, which I'd like to have passed out. And this is because of consultation with the Department of Health. They prefer to have a little more flexibility with where this comes from. So what you'll be seeing as this amendment goes out is that it will be coming from the section where the Minnesota Cancer Surveillance System is from. I guess I'll wait till you all get the amendment. Okay, does everybody have it? It changes the part of the Minnesota Department of Health where the money would be coming from the cancer registry to the chronic disease and environmental epidemiology section. That gives them a little more flexibility. Basically, we're talking about one FTE person here who will be doing this work with a little bit of administrative cost. That's the amendment, members. I will first move the A50 amendment to the amendment. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. We now have the A16 amendment as amended before us. Any discussion? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, would we be able to hear from the Department of Health in what the implications and what won't get done that would have gotten done? Would that be possible?
Sure.
Thank you.
Department of Health. And I might say we might also want to ask them what will get done that wouldn't have gotten done either. So let's see if they can address both those questions.
Madam Chair, if I could, I was assuming they would tell us what could get done,
okay,
or will get done.
Good. I
was
like
also
that.
Wondering if there was any other side to it.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Manning. Would you introduce yourself, please, for the tape?
Mary Manning, Health Promotion Chronic Disease with the Minnesota Department of Health. Madam Chair, Representative, with a reduction of $100,000 out of the MCSS, we would be concerned that we would not have the resources to meet our certification standards. Right now, we are working within an appropriation both at the federal and state level that hasn't been increased in the last, for the state, for at least for the last 10 years. So as you know, costs of employees and other operating costs go up, the number of people available, you know, to, that we can fund goes down. We know that without that, we would have two less FTEs. Right now, we are looking at whether or not that would come out of our IT area or the folks that do the quality assurance over looking at the records out in the field, because we know about 20% of the records have an error in them. And the impact, I would imagine, would mean right now, because we are stressed with staff, is we would be, right now we're about 3/4 of a year behind in our data. I would imagine that would go at least up to a year.
If I could add, Madam Chair, what you asked, and what would be the new things that would get done if the bill was passed?
I'm sorry,
Madam Chair, have you seen the amendment?
Yes, we have. My understanding is from the amendment that Hennepin County would be working on drafting a self-administered occupational residential history survey that would be self-administered, and they would be evaluating that. Is that correct, Madam Chair?
Representative McNamara and Ms. Manning, as you pointed out, in I did have quite a meeting with the Hennepin County. There's a letter of support, I believe, in your packet. Did you all get that from Hennepin County? Do you have that or not? Please check. See if you have that letter. What they will be doing is expanding their own cancer registry. They have an existing and highly respected cancer registry, which does they do coordinate with the state health department. So they're kind of like the grassroots team that's going to show us how to get it done. When we talked with the health department about doing this before, they came back with a $3 million proposal to do a statewide system. So we're hoping here to show them how to do a pilot that'll be just local, Hennepin County, and you know, we'll do the kinds of things that we've been trying to do for some time. At a much lower cost. Any other questions? Okay, if not, the amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Okay, it's the I'll take next the another one of mine, the A13 amendment. A13 amendment. Committee members, you should recognize this amendment. I'll first of all move the adoption of the A13 amendment. This talks about having the health department work with the various state, local, and federal agencies to determine the appropriate or allowable exposure levels for pentachlorophenol in those areas in neighborhoods where utility poles are treated with this PCP or with creosote, both of those. The probable human carcinogens is how they are both listed by our US EPA, and we want them to look at the human health risk limits or maximum contaminant levels for the workers and for the neighbors who live there and for anybody else who handles them. This is a scaled back version of the bill that we heard before this committee, where we had actually a banning of the polls. In this case, we're just asking the health department to look at the health risk limits the maximum contaminant levels that are allowed. And one of the things we heard when we heard from the folks who are concerned about this is that the workers who work with the various polls also are concerned about creosote. So we added that to the evaluation of the health risk limits as well. And that's the amendment, members. Have any questions? Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this is a good idea. Madam Chair, it's been brought to my attention, and I'm thinking that we should possibly think about incorporating it in your amendment, or at least find out. My understanding, that poll that started the original discussion has still not been removed so it can be analyzed to find out if it's something we should be worried about. And I guess, Madam Chair, what's your thoughts? I think we should tell Excel to get out there and get that poll out and analyze it. And I'm wondering, I thought that we had kind of a understanding with them they were going to get that done. And Madam Chair, what's your thoughts? I think we should be telling them to get that poll out and find out what that smell is and stuff.
Mrs. McNamara, there are many polls, hundreds of polls. So it's not just a single case. It's just that we had a person who brought it to us who had, you know, been actively trying to see if she couldn't remove it because they can't use their backyard, as you remember, people walking down the alley. But since then, I mean, we've had information from numerous other neighbors who are having the same problem. These are going up all over the city. And I feel like if we could at least get, you know, our Department of Public Health to help people understand what the risks are, then we can go forward. I'm not trying to deal with that issue of a particular poll or different parts of the city or other places right now, and I don't think that's in this committee. It's not appropriate for this committee. Representative McNamara.
Well, the only thing, Madam Chair, I think the one original poll seemed to have a lot of odor and issues with it, and I'm wondering if we're missing an opportunity if we got that poll out. And could, I'm just disappointed that Excel hasn't gone out and taken the poll out so they could get going on finding out what it may be. And I guess you're right, this is probably...
I can tell you there's piles of them on the ground already that could be analyzed in Minneapolis. You can go over several places, I can tell you, in the city, and you don't have to even take out the existing one to get what you're after, I think. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, is there a fiscal note on this provision, or is this adding an FTE to the Department of Health, or do we know what the cost is on this?
There's a fiscal note at $55,000, and it would be coming from the Environmental Health General Fund, which has about $2.8 million in it right now. So it's not a full FTE, and we think they can do it with an existing appropriation.
And Madam Chair, just to that point, I think as you spoke, you know, there are lots of polls throughout the neighborhood, and I think this one was kind of the rallying, not to use a pun here, but rallying around the pole here, but this is kind of one of those that kind of got everybody's attention. And I think we had in committee the testimony that, you know, out of 270 studies, PCP is not considered a toxin, and if we've got a $6.4 billion budget shortfall and we're going after polls, I've got some serious concerns that we're ever going to really address the deficit situation. I would encourage members, we got a ton of studies going on here, and we're putting our attention where we need to, which would be to address the deficit rather than increase the number of studies that we're doing in the committee, and I would ask for a no vote on the amendment.
Okay. Any further discussion? Oh, Representative Hayden. Oh, Representative Stetson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure that we know that PCP isn't a toxin. There was a difference of opinion in the committee, depending on who you talk to. If you talk to the folks that live in the community and seem to have some expertise in this, they felt like it was. If you talk to the people from Excel and the person that they brought in, he said that there were studies that said that they weren't. So I just don't know if we're clear on that, Representative Peterson. In addition, that part of the city is under assault. They have high levels of things that we do know, arsenic, benzene, and other issues in that part of the city. So I think that this is wise. I think that we owe it to the folks in that community to see what is going through their bloodstream to make sure that they're not being even more poisoned than they already have because of the brownfields that have been left in that part of the city. So I would vote yes for the amendment.
Representative Scott, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And what Representative Hayden says, dovetailing off of that, that to me is all the more reason just to yank that poll out. If there's that much of a concern over it, we need to get that poll out. And has XL been approached about doing that? And if so, what has been the response?
Representative Scott, I think you were in the committee when the individual discussed this. Do you want me to go over it? I can if you don't recall. Maybe you. Okay. All right.
The individual who talked with us at that day had, as I recall, had called Excel, and there was an effort to try to remove the pole eventually. But actually, the very first response from Excel was it'll cost you $1,000. Then it went up to $3,000. Then there was an offer after one of the city councilmen in the area said, I'll get you a free pole, Excel. If you'll take out the old one, we'll give you a free one. It was made out of a different material. And Excel said no. And so then Excel came back and said, okay, well, after all, we will take it out. The problem is what they offered to replace it with, according to the witness, was the same kind of pole. And she's not willing to do that, as you might well imagine. So the issue, I hope that it explains the history. And I think it was pretty clear. You know, there was a good faith effort, I think, of the family who was living there who, you know, described not only her inability to use the backyard, but her neighbors walking down the alley. And there are, as I said, numerous incidents of this. Now, it's not a one-pole situation. We just happened to have one person who came and talked with us about it. Does that answer your question?
Well, not entirely, because I still don't understand. If I have something in my backyard that I felt was possibly causing harm to my family, I would want to get it out. I just think maybe sometimes, you know, when you're producing mass quantities of something, every once in a while there's a dud. There's something that goes wrong with one. Maybe it's a lemon with a car. And I feel like maybe this pole is probably the exception and not the rule. And I hate to, as Representative Severson said, you know, spend money on something in this budget deficit time on something that could be just a one-time occurrence. That's my main concern.
Okay, yeah. There. All right. Any further discussion? Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scott. As I recall, there were two types of poles. One was a harder wood, a red cedar pole that was used traditionally and was treated but not as harshly as the new pole, which is made of much softer wood and is treated for a longer period of time and soaks up and leaches a lot more easily than the old poles.
Thank you, Representative Rosenthal. That was part of the testimony, so I appreciate your adding that. Okay. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor of the A-15 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no?
No.
Motion prevails and the A-15 amendment is adopted. Okay. Here's another one. Members, you may have in your packet an A-10 amendment. It's going to be substituted with the A-2 amendment. And I have to apologize. I have to make a slight. Does the A-2 amendment pass out?
Yes.
It's getting passed out right now. Okay. Okay. Members, I'll move the A-2 amendment, and let me describe to you what this amendment does. This amendment describes the lead grants administration at the Department of Health, and it says that organization to train workers to provide these various services for children who are lead poisoned. We're opening this grant up in this amendment to allow more organizations to apply. And so the language is it provides that AmeriCorps funding or positions or leveraging matching funds as part of the delivery of service must be given priority for the grant funds. I do have to do an oral amendment because this has been kind of a carefully worked on agreement between several parties, and I inadvertently left off four words that need to go on line 1.8. So this was in the other amendment that you have before you. I just didn't get it transferred over to this amendment. So it's not a new amendment, but it is language that I'm making sure stays in this amendment. So in front of the words swab, please insert on line 1.8. Please insert screening, comma, education, comma, outreach, and. And you'll notice those are the exact language that was in the amendment that you have, and I just inadvertently left it out when we were putting this together. So, members, those of you who may have wanted this to be opened up in the past probably would like this amendment because it does provide more competition for the funding. Okay, thank you. Representative Lane indicated to me that in the previous amendment, I did in front of the word screening should also be the word lead, of course. So thank you for that. So add the word lead in front of the new proposed oral amendment. Any discussion on the oral amendment? Gibson, do you want to talk about the oral amendment?
No, ma'am.
Okay, so any discussion on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate this amendment. I know that we had this discussion on the bill previously. And I actually sent a letter to the Attorney General requesting an opinion because in the Constitution it strictly prohibits this. So I think this is a move in the right direction. It's opening it up to contracts, and I appreciate you moving forward with this.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and that amendment is adopted. Let's look at the A-17 amendment since we're on lead. Members, I'll move the A-17 amendment before you. Let me just describe this amendment. Over the course of years, we have been looking at the issue of childhood lead poisoning in the state of Minnesota. And Minnesota has provided some leadership in the area of screening for childhood lead poisoning around the country. I mean, when I got elected, I think the blood lead level that was considered harmful to children was up in the 60s or something like that. What we are doing with this bill is moving it a little bit further down as we continue the actual number for what should be allowable in terms of childhood lead should really be zero. But this moves it down another notch to 5 micrograms per deciliter instead of 10. And they're working at this on the federal level as well. I'm not sure where that exactly will be. But one of the important things that we know is that when you screen more children or lower the lead level, there are some increased costs. This increased costs up front, let me put it that way. Because the more we can keep children from being lead poisoned, the more we reduce our costs for special education, and other kinds of issues. Even criminal activity has been documented with problems that young people, children who are damaged, irreversibly damaged by childhood lead poisoning. It really affects not only their learning abilities, but also their behavior. So we're in this bill saying that we recognize that it might be some increased costs. So on line 1.9, it says the revised guidelines must be implemented to the extent possible using available resources. So we are not adding a cost here without saying that we would want the additional or available resources to be able to cover it. And I don't know if you have any further questions, members, but we're trying to make sure that we really do protect our children as much as we can with the childhood lead poisoning issue. Representative McNair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what is the level that we currently react to in children?
I believe it's 10, and we have an intervention at 10, and I think it's 10 or 12. Maybe if you ask the health department, I think it's 10 or 12. Is it 12? It's at 10, okay. 10. We keep changing it, and we have different levels for different kinds of interventions. Representative McNamara.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, so are there other agencies that look at a level of 5 as one that we should have intervention in? Do you know, do other states have different standards than Minnesota?
I believe that there are other states. I don't have that. This is Representative Dabney, so I don't have that at the top of my head, but I believe not only are there other states, but the federal government is also looking at this because they recognize, you know, even 5, the level of 5 micrograms per deciliter is too much. But, you know, it's always been a problem of resources. And so in this case, we're just saying these guidelines to recommend these health protective actions. They go in, health protective actions are things like helping a family understand what they can do to prevent childhood lead poisoning. So everything from maybe getting window guards that prevent the lead dust from being released when the windows go up and down, or sometimes replacing windows, cleaning up the dust, having children take off their shoes when they come in from outside where they have been playing in the yard that may have lead dust is one of the most preventive things we can do. So there's a lot of education that's involved here, and that's why we know it's a really good investment. So the guidelines will help us get to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know we had this discussion, I think it was last year, on this version. I'm wondering if the Department of Health has, in terms of the, is there any study that says that the difference between 5 and 10 micrograms has a significant impact in terms of what the implications are, not just fiscally, but also in terms of the levels that have been proven to be a hindrance to developing mines?
Yes, absolutely. I don't know if you want to hear from the Department of Health, but yes. Great, they're going to come forward. I think the documentation actually is how many IQ points you lose for each microgram, and there's extensive research on this.
Madam Chair, Craig Aitken,
welcome to the
Department of Health. With me is Linda Bremer, the Acting Director of Environmental Health.
Welcome, Ms. Bremer.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Severson, the question, as I heard it, is what's the difference between 5 and 10? Do you mean in terms of what's impact on the child or fiscal?
Yeah. Madam Chair, that would be correct. Yep.
And I guess I don't have the definitive scientific difference. We know lead is bad, and as we run the enforcement program, it's a matter of how low we can detect. The 5 is about the laboratory analysis detection level, and so it's difficult to figure out what you can do. There are no medical guidelines to take care of a child at 5. You have to go in and look for sources in the home. So it's a more difficult medical challenge from that end. But I don't dispute that lead contamination is bad at that level. It's just a matter of what we can effectively do to take care of that blood lead level. I've asked our statistician to do an analysis, and he looked at what we have in blood lead is a series of tests. You get a first test, and then you get a backup test to confirm. If you start with a capillary test, then you need a confirmatory venous test. And quite often what we find in the 5 to 10 range is that those do not get confirmed as elevated blood leads. It might be dirty fingers that cause the 5 to 10. When we get in the range of 10 to 15, those are more likely to be elevated blood leads. So again, as we focus our resources, that we've said that they're better spent on the 10s to 15s. Those are a bigger problem.
And Madam Chair, follow up.
Representative Severson.
And previous to the 10, was there a threshold previous to the 10? Could you address that? I'm just trying to remember. As you're speaking, I'm beginning to remember some of the arguments that we had in the past on this particular issue. But was there a level that we looked for previously before 10 micrograms per liter?
Madam Chair, yes, Representative Severson. We were at 15 previously.
15?
Yes. Yes, sir.
And for how many years this summer were we at 15?
Madam Chair, in my experience, I just started at the Health Department in 2000, and that's where we were then. Mm-hmm. And when did we change it? In mm-hmm. 2005, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's as we get more science, we look at the level. Mr. Aitken's reminding me, 10 is still the national standard that the Centers for Disease Control asks us to use as an intervention level.
And Madam Chair, as follow up. So if we as Minnesota went down to 5, we would be pioneering new areas of that would not necessarily have a national database in order to support that. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Severson, I believe that's correct. I believe there's probably only one other state one state that goes down to 5. So we are, right now we're consistent with the federal database going down to 10.
So, Mr. Stevenson, if I can just provide a little more information. You know, this is an evolving science, as Ms. Bremer indicated. As I said, when we started some years ago, we had some of the biggest people to oppose doing anything with tablet poisoning, even identifying it, where our pediatricians in Minnesota, they didn't recognize it as a problem. This has been an evolving science, and it has been coming down and down and down and down as we've had resources to do the cleanup. And as I mentioned, some of the cleanup doesn't cost very much. It's just educating parents. There's a wonderful Big Bird video to show little kids about why they should take their shoes off at the door. I mean, there are numerous things, ways that we can help prevent children from neurological damage, and this is one of the very clearly established neurological toxins for our kids. But the other thing to point out is, my staff's pointing out with us too, we're not going down 5 years for intervention. We're asking them to do the guidelines at this point. And when they come back, we'll probably talk about some more about that. But we do know, and I can tell you, that we have people introducing 5 at the federal level. I think the health department's probably aware of that too. So this is not just something that Minnesota is coming up with, although I'd be very happy to have Minnesota be one of the pioneers in protecting our children in this way.
And just Representative Stevenson. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of a follow-up on that was, as we're remembering this discussion here, one of the issues was the intravenous requirement to get down to 5 gram level, and that scared the stew out of the kids. So I appreciate the intent, but I think trauma can sometimes exceed the benefit.
Was it McNair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bremer, you made mention that I think you said you already know some folks are in the 5 to 10 range potentially. So do you already have the data, or do you not currently do the second test on those folks in the 5 to 10 range? What I'm trying to get at, do you already have the data that you would need here, or would you have to do more work now on the 5 to 10 people? And would that potentially mean there would be less FTEs available to deal with the 10-plus folks?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, we do already get the data. Whenever children are tested for their blood lead, when they go in and have a checkup, the lab results are reported to the health department. And so we get those results. And the follow-ups come when they're over 10. And that's why we were able to calculate where do the 5 to 10s go, do they tend to get higher, or do the 10s to 15s get higher. And so those tests are paid for by healthcare or medical assistance. They are not paid for by the health department. Our program takes the data, and under a Centers for Disease Control grant, that's where we have our surveillance database.
Was that McNamara?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you have a larger grant available to you to deal with the 5 to 10 people, or is your grant of a finite amount and the level of service to the people over 10 would be less now, or do you have access to a larger grant to serve the people in the 5 to 10 range?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, I don't believe our grant amount would change if the number changed, because, again, it's a federal grant, and the federal government uses 10 as an intervention level.
Is that McNair?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And this has some requirements of getting back to these folks. So if you would have a finite amount of money available, in my understanding, and it would just be spread out over more people if we included the 5 to 10?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, As Representative Clark has said, this does not mandate intervention. It tells us to reconsider our guidelines down to 5. Our concern is that it would generate the expectations that there's something. If you took your child into the doctor and they were in the 5 to 10 range, and the doctor reported the results back and had no intervention other than education to recommend, we're concerned that that sets an expectation that there is something we can do down to 5 as opposed to 10 and 15. And so the doctors don't have those tools right now. That's what we would have to develop, is the educational pieces.
Representative McNamara?
Okay.
I just point out again to you that on line 1.10 we talk about this must be implemented to the extent possible using available resources. And I guess...
Madam Chair, if I may...
Jacob?
we did do a fiscal note on this bill, or on this amendment. There is a cost to this. It's House File 419.
This is not House File 419,
but similar to what you were asking in this amendment.
Okay, I have not seen that fiscal note. Can you provide that to the committee?
I don't have it with me. I apologize. I just have a tracking sheet of our fiscal note, but it's in the system. It's completed.
Well, it would be helpful to be in our system, but we haven't seen it.
I believe Ms. Adrian could probably pull that up for you. But.
Okay.
And so, while it says, the language says that while within the extent possible using available resources, I would just caution the committee to understand that the Department of Health is already, under this omnibus bill, taking a $2 million a year reduction in our general fund resources. In addition, there have been a number of amendments offered here today, including a pilot HCMC, study of the polls with the PCP, and this bill that it adds additionally to that reduction. 2 years ago, nearly 20% of the department's general fund or the department's budget was general funding. In the coming 2 years, we're at 14%, and by the time this full session is over, we're likely to be in single digits. We don't have the capacity, frankly, to do additional work without additional resources. And so I realize that that's a desire of this group. These are austere economic times. But, you know, I would certainly not expect that the department can do more without any resources.
Representative Farland?
Yes.
Madam Chair, could you share with us what that fiscal note is?
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, I believe that the fiscal impact was $79,000 in fiscal year 10 and $77,000 a year in 11 and 12.
And Ms. Jacob, that was without having the language to be done using available resources, correct? That's an important caveat, Representative McFarland. When you put the language that says it's within available resources, that means if they don't have them, they don't have to do it. Okay. Members, I just want to just make one final comment on this bill. No, there's probably no better investment in our children or grandchildren, especially if they start toddling around. And they get into childhood, they run the risk of childhood blood poisoning. It is a irreversible damage that is done to these little ones. And, you know, it's disproportionately it falls upon those folks who are low income and people of color. But you know what? Some of my first witnesses about this were middle class people who didn't know when they were doing some work in their homes that they were generating lead dust, or when they had a leak in their ceiling and the dust from the old lead paint landed on the floor, that their little children were being impacted. So this reaches across many, many kinds of our constituents, and I think it's such a good investment to have the education and have our doctors, if they don't know how to give people a pamphlet that says, take off your shoes, check for lead dust, you know, we'd be doing our children a big disfavor. So with that, I guess I would just renew my motion that the A-17 amendment, which is before us, be adopted. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, no?
No.
Motion prevails, and the amendment passes. Okay. Senator Morgan, are you ready with the A-40 amendment? Is that you know?
Madam Chair, Representative Knuth was going to be here to speak to that.
Okay, why don't we send for her and ask?
Okay, that'd be great.
So let's take another minute. There's a small one. Morgan, are you ready with your other amendment? 430433?
I'm looking for it, Madam Chair, and I don't see it in my pile. Now I have it.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move the A090433 amendment.
Is there Morgan? Move the 043C amendment. Go ahead and speak to the amendment. Does anybody have an amendment?
Has it, it's a, yeah. Seems like people don't have it. While we see if we can get a hold of it, I'll explain it. If folks want to turn to page, the bottom of page 5 of the DE3. In order to get the bill, in order to get the original manufactured home trust, relocation trust fund going, the Housing Finance Agency had agreed to front any of the early on closures that occurred before the trust fund could get itself established, and then they would be reimbursed later. For some reason, the sunset on that was extended inadvertently, and so what this bill, what this amendment would do would be to remove that extension of the sunset. So the sunset originally established when the home trust fund was established 2 years ago will remain as June 30, 2009, as originally established, and not be extended to June 30, 2011. This amendment essentially eliminates the entire section from the DE3, which would have extended that sunset. So the sunset will remain the same. I believe MHFA is here, and they can speak to their support of this, but that's what this amendment does.
Do you want MHFA to address them?
I don't need them to, Madam Chair, if they don't feel any need to and nobody else feels the need to have them down here. But.
Right. Do we have the amendment?
I do not have the amendment.
Okay, we're waiting for it to show up.
Yeah.
Looks like we have somebody from MHFA in the meantime. Go ahead and... Yeah.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Jeanette Blankenship from Minnesota Housing. Just want to reiterate what Representative Morgan said. We do support this. When the bill was originally passed 2 years ago, we offered to advance the fund because obviously there was a zero balance. Now the fund has been up for 2 years. We don't think we need to have that, the sunset being 2 more years. It's fine to keep it the way it was June 30th, 2009. There is money available in the fund.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was looking for the amendment, so I kind of lost it. Is this on the manufactured housing? Was that? And this is for the reimbursement for the collection of fees that go into the trust fund that allow for the relocation of manufactured housing. It was forwarded by the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Now we're pulling those monies back because the funds have been accrued in the account. Is that the way we're reading it?
Madam Chair.
Representative Morgan.
Essentially, Representative Severson, that's right. The MHFA was going to be there before the funds got up to a certain level that would support this to make sure that folks were made whole when their park closed. Now that the fund has had time to get itself established, I should say in the bill originally, okay. That sunset date was there for June 30th of this year. For some reason, it was extended, and it shouldn't need to be extended. So what we're doing is taking out that extension and allowing it to sunset as originally planned, June 30 of this year.
And Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. And just I appreciate the Minnesota Finance Agency being coming forward. I wonder if Manufactured Home Coalition or that organization could come forward. And if there's peace in the valley, we have no resistance to this amendment.
Madam Chair, Justin Bell from the All Parks Association is here. I don't know if anybody from the manufactured home, the park owners are here, but as I understand it, there is peace in the valley.
Welcome to the committee, and do we have peace?
Yes, we do. Originally, when the fund was started and there was a zero balance, this was there to advance money to the fund. It originally got thrown in this bill because we've been trying to fix the collection method for a couple of years. The new language from Representative Morgan's amendment yesterday should make the fund protected and solvent, so we don't object at all to removing this.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Mark Bruner, the Manufactured Modular Housing Association. And yet the provision was originally in the bill as described in terms of a way to ensure that there is money in the fund if there had been a drain on the fund from claims, and yet the fund hadn't collected what it needed to pay those out. The fund is working. Obviously, the amendment not to extend the sunset. The idea of extending the sunset was that you would to ensure that if there were a drain on the fund, there would be some way to cover it. Now, overall, just a minute beyond the amendment, essentially what the bill does is puts in place a new collection system that will take some time to sort of work its way through. So, essentially we did the sunset 2 years ago just to ensure that if there were a shortfall under this new collection system, and there isn't, it's working. However, what the bill does is put in place a completely different way of collecting the funds, so that perhaps that's why the sunset had been extended, just to see how this new collection system would work.
Thank you. Mr. Stevenson?
And thank you, Madam Chair. I'm probably not to our testifier here right now, but I think one of the issues that he raises in the amendment that went on yesterday, the new collection fund that went on with that amendment, can create some issues here. Getting rid of this extension may be premature. I'd like to believe there's peace in the valley. We can't see what's over the horizon here, particularly with the new procedures that are in the amendment. I think it was the Rosenthal amendment that was on yesterday. Oh, it was Morgan. It was you. And I'll have a motion in a moment here, Madam Chair, but I guess at this point I'm fine with it.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, the number 8433 is before us. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and that amendment is adopted.
Hey, Madam Chair, if I could, I would move to reconsider the A090380, having voted on the prevailing side on that. I'd like to move to reconsider that. That was in regards to the Manufactured Housing Relocation Trust Fund that we adopted yesterday.
Yeah, we need to get that amendment passed out. Have you seen that, Representative Morgan?
Madam Chair, I have seen the amendment, and I have agreed to support, if we divide the amendment, the first half of the amendment, but not the second half. Okay. And if we need to vote to reconsider the amendment that was passed yesterday, I would support doing that if Representative Severson agrees to consider the first half of the amendment, not the second.
And Madam Chair, I would agree to that. So we could do that one too. I think we can.
I guess we have two amendments that we're looking at here. Actually, I just need a little advice. I think if we have amended the bill, that now is part of the main bill, and I'm not sure that we need to actually reconsider an amendment. I think we just need to we need to consider the new amendment.
Madam Chair, I'll withdraw my motion to reconsider, and if we can move on with
look
the 849
amendment,
that would be fine. Thank you.
Yeah. As far as we know, we're all on the same page with that? Okay. Okay. So we have the A49 amendment before us, then. Is that your amendment, Representative Stevenson?
Madam Chair, that would be correct.
Okay. And is this Representative Morgan, is this the one you want to divide?
Madam Chair, I'm happy to divide, or if Representative Severson is willing to divide, if that's fine by me, too.
Okay. I can just declare that it's divided. That's all we have to really do. So we'll divide it between lines 1.3 and 1.4.
That is my desire, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay.
We don't need to vote on that. We can just divide it.
Right.
Okay. So, which would you like to take first, Representative Stevenson?
Just one second here, Madam Chair. If I could.
I believe you're dividing it between line 1.3 and line 1.4. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is the 849. We should be amending the bill, I believe, as amended rather than amending the amendment. I think that's just a slight technical change there. The bill is amended. Was it Morgan?
No.
Okay.
This is the same one.
Yeah. I guess I want to just check with Health Research. Do we have an agreement that that's the proper procedure? That we amend the bill as amended rather than amending a previous amendment?
Madam Chair, I think you have to amend, because we don't have a new document to deal with, we need to amend the A090380.
Amendment. Okay.
Amendment.
That's fine. We'll go back to that then.
Then I guess the appropriate motion, Madam Chair, would be to move to reconsider the...
Representative Stevenson moves to reconsider the... would be the...
A090380
amendment. All those in favor? Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion be veiled. Okay, the Stevenson amendment is before it, and we are dividing it with that... We have the 849 amendment. It's divided between 1.3 and 1.4. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. And Representative Stevens, should we take the 1.3 first? Is that?
That'd be fine.
Okay. Okay. Why don't you discuss your amendment, please? Discuss your amendment. Representative Stevens moves the 849 amendment, line 1.3.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Part of this amendment, as it went through yesterday, had some implications I was not aware of, and I think have huge implications on what we were just talking about in terms of the trust fund itself. What's happening here is when the legal challenge is put to the trailer park owner, the litigation takes place, the attorney fees were included in that provision. So basically what's happened if someone sues and wins that award, the judge is required by the verbiage that's in the current existing language that they shall award the attorney's fees out of the trust fund itself. This puts in jeopardy the solvency of the trust fund. And I think if we go to the verbiage that basically says shall to may, it's more permissive in the courts and allows the judge to take into account the amount of money that's in the trust fund and to either award partial or it just leaves more discretion with the judge. And I think that would be the intent, is that we don't gut the fund. In essence, what could happen is you would have someone who brought a suit and could be awarded $5,000, and you could have $100,000 in attorney's fees, and it could drain the fund prematurely. So this gives the judge a little more discretion in determining what those awards would be, and I would request your support on that provision.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, I support the first half of your amendment wholeheartedly. I think it's the right thing to do to give the judge discretion.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, the... Stevenson amendment for line 1.3 is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment 1.3, line 1.3 is adopted. Now, Representative Stevenson, the line 1.4 of your amendment is before us.
And thank you, Madam Chair, members. And I think the second part is basically, as we know, the attorney's fees can create some huge amounts of claim requirements in that, and I guess I would not have any problem with reasonable attorney's fees at the discretion of the courts. Again, we're getting into the issue here where the initial intent on this provision was to try and bring some financial solvency into the trust fund itself so that when it took place, there was monies available for awarding. And I would hope that we could get out of the issue of that whole section basically saying we're gonna award attorney's fees. In fact, Madam Chair, I think this bill should have gone to civil law with that language in there. And I know that we heard it and then we laid it over in committee. And so it would probably, if we don't take that out of there, probably be a motion on the floor to refer this over to to the appropriate committee that should have heard this provision previously. So I would.
Are you withdrawing your motion then, or are you continuing it?
No, I will continue.
Okay.
Basically, deleting the attorney's fees.
Okay. Representative McNamara? Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. I think it was to Representative Morgan's bill, so I should probably write him first and then Representative McNamara.
Madam Chair, I can't support this portion of the amendment. One of the problems that we're trying to address here is compliance. Making sure that the relocation trust fund won't be sufficient if the park owners are not compliant in getting the resources into the fund by collecting that $12 a year from the homeowners. And the only way to assure the compliance is to make sure that there is a stick involved. And the stick is having somebody with oversight come in, and that would be the court. Somebody has to bring a lawsuit. So if they're not complying, somebody needs to bring that lawsuit. And since the homeowners generally are not in a position to pay $150, $200 an hour for attorney's fees to bring the lawsuit, very often there would be no method of compliance. So this hopefully will never be used. I hope that nobody has to go to court to enforce the compliance of the park owners with this. That's not the goal. The goal is it's homeowners' money. It's going into a fund. All the park owners have to do is play their part. But in case they decide that it's in their interest not to play that part, this needs to be there as a compliance tool to make sure that the fund is sufficient for folks who have paid into it.
Representative McNamara?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the important thing we did was we changed the word shall to may. I think, Representative Severson, that's the really important thing. And I think here now, I actually think, Madam Chair, Representative Severson, we may want to keep this in because on either side, either an association or an owner that brought a frivolous lawsuit should be able to recoup their costs potentially. It may actually make somebody bring a more frivolous lawsuit with the idea that they don't need to worry about. I think it's more consistent with current law. I actually think we probably could eliminate the sentence, I'm not sure, but I think under current law, and again, I don't serve on those committees, but I think it may be good if we leave it in. Representative Severson, I may want to, originally your amendment I thought was great because it dealt with the shell, but I'm wondering if we wouldn't want to leave it in to protect both sides against somebody doing something that's egregious or unfair.
Representative Severson?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if, in light of the testimony that was previous to this, that we're changing the way we are collecting under this provision, that we're asking the park owners to be a collection agency for the state, and that they hold the liability. My question arises, then, who would actually bring the lawsuit then, because the park owners themselves are the ones that are held at harm here if the residents don't pay up. So who would bring the suit would be my question. And in this provision, basically, we're saying if the park owner brings a suit against the individual for $12. I don't know why they would do that, but I mean, I guess the question arises, if there's a big court challenge that comes up, the park owner who's really holding the bag here can get stuck with all the attorney's fees and all the stuff that goes on here. And it goes to the initial question, should the park actually, the park owners be collecting the monies for the state? And that, you know, as we've moved to reconsider this amendment, perhaps we could have the park owners come up and testify.
You know, we have five more to go. And I think you have done a very good job of explaining your amendment, and I think the McNamara has. I mean, we will if you really need it, but I'm just wondering if you really want to. Excuse me, we have 13 more amendments. Do you really want to do it? We're going to be coming back here.
Well, I love being here, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, can we vote on that?
Madam Chair, in the interest of time, I will let us vote on my portion, the second portion of the amendment here, but it will be an issue that will come up again, I'm sure.
That's fine. Thank you. Okay, the second Severson Amendment is before us, line 1.4, I believe it is. Line 1.4 of the A49 Amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion does not prevail, and
that football again.
Now we need to readopt the whole A09-0380 amendment as amended by the Stevenson Amendment. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and that amendment, as amended, is adopted. We are going to try to move along. We have until 1 o'clock for this one. That's why I'm just pointing it out. Okay. The next amendment is the 840 amendment. Representative Canoe. Actually, Representative Morgan is offering the amendment.
Madam Chair, I will offer the A40 amendment, and there is an A52 amendment to the amendment as well that I have that we need to pass out. So I'll let Representative Canoes talk about both while these are being passed out.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, Representative Canoes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Basically, the committee heard House File 250, I don't know if it was last, the week before last or last week, the Toxic Free Kids Act, and so I don't know if I, what the A40 amendment is the Toxic Free Kids Act in the form it was passed out of this committee. And what the A52 amendment does is strike the language that is only related to the PCA and adds a line about the activities in this section only implemented only to the extent that existing federal, state, and private resources are available, and that's some language that was suggested by the chair. And so I don't know if you want me to go into the meat of the amendment since the committee has already voted in the affirmative for that.
Let's just get the amendment on. It puts you in the order that is updated.
So the amendment to the A40 amendment.
Yeah, the A52 amendment. Mr. Morgan.
Madam Chair, I'll move that A52 amendment now that people have it before them, and Representative Knuth already described what it does. So.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. A52 amendment is now part of your bill. You want to explain this? So we did have extensive testimony on this, and this committee before members and back before us. And so maybe briefly, go ahead and explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yeah, the amendment is basically House Bill 250, which is sitting in the Finance Committee, and is also in the Environment Finance Omnibus Bill in a form, since it has PCA impact. And you want me to go through it again? The substance of it.
A summary of
basically, what it does is
a lot of testimony, so
have the Department of Health classify chemicals of high concern, cancer-causing, endocrine disruptors, very persistent, very bioaccumulative, reproductive toxins, and then within that requires the identification of priority chemicals. These are chemicals we're looking at towards phase out. They're found in humans or in our environment, essentially, and then looking to identify safer alternatives. We stress the language on the reporting of which priority chemicals are in products that manufacturers are distributing in Minnesota with the amendment just adopted. And it basically is trying to understand which chemicals we need to be concerned about, which ones are in our bodies and our environment, so we want to be looking for safer alternatives and moving towards safer alternatives. That language isn't in the bill, but this helps us set up a framework to better understand the chemicals we need to be concerned about, and it asks for a report about how this listing is going and saying donations to the state can be used. The agency in this case would be the PCA to participate in the Interstate Chemicals Clearinghouse. I think they already are taking steps to do that. It puts us in a direction of addressing toxic chemicals in our environment, in our bodies, and in our products in a way that the federal government has been failing to do for decades. And I think it protects the health of, it's a step to help us protect the health of Minnesotans. In this case, looking mostly at children, but we took that part of the reporting back part out. So that's kind of the basic purpose of the bill. I'm happy to answer questions. I know people could testify, but since you've already had a full hearing and a positive vote, I don't know if we want to go down that road.
No, we're not. We'll take questions from committee members, though. Representative McNamara, you had a question?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if we could hear from the Department of Health.
Okay, Department of Health, very briefly, please. I'm going to be saying this to all of the folks. We are going to try to be brief, otherwise we're going to be here late tonight.
And just, Madam Chair, before the department comes, I just wanted to state, I think the departments and the agencies have done their part on the fiscal note, but I still haven't seen it. I think it's in the middle of management and budget is my sense, but I could be looking towards that, so I haven't gotten it out of that
come on down.
Part of
coming.
The process.
Yeah, we hope the price is right. Okay. I don't know how many people got that reference, but...
Madam Chair, John Stein, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Health, and with me is Linda Bremer. She's the Acting Director for Environmental Health. And
welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, and the question was...
Representative McNamara.
Well, Madam Chair, my question is either for Commissioner Stein or Ms. Bremer, but if I'm not mistaken, you were just up and testified about the cuts that you've taken and how you're kind of getting to your limit of what you can do. And we are passing some bills that, if I understand them rightly, are saying if you don't have the time and resources to do them, you're not going to do them. And I'm just wondering if this isn't another one that has got all kinds of language about stuff to do that's got to have significant fiscal costs. And then the last thing we've done is add a sentence, if you don't have the time or money to do it, you won't be doing it. I'm trying to understand what we're doing here. Actually, I mean, this is the third or fourth one today.
And Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, The language, as I understand it, is if it says if resources are available, to the extent that existing federal, state, and private resources are available. The department is currently fully occupied conducting risk assessment. This would fall into our area of business, looking at human health risks and doing risk assessments on contaminants that are found in drinking water or in air or in soil. This is a slightly different line of inquiry because of the relationship to products and product utilization. So there's a relationship to the Pollution Control Agency. Your question is, do we have available resources at the present time to perform additional work on this? No, we do not. We don't. The fiscal note is unclear to me where the status on that is, but we would not have sufficient resources at the present time to invest in additional risk assessment activity.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. But Assistant Commissioner Stein, you could take folks from the water issue in the East Metro and from Cottage Grove, my district, and put them on this. So we wouldn't know information about the Scotchgard, I'll call it, for lack of a better where you could take those folks away from that important program and put them on this. That would be an option?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, actually the staff that you're thinking of are occupied in evaluating drinking water contaminant risks, and we are currently in a rule revision process. We just updated our rule on health protection, our health risk limits for groundwater. We basically have updated our levels of concern for about 20 compounds. We've got about another 80 compounds to reevaluate. So the staff that we are employing in drinking water risk assessment have a full plate ahead of them. This activity, though, in terms of the consultation with PCA, we would be able to coordinate with the PCA in looking at this question, which this is more of a hazard-based approach rather than a risk assessment approach. And we are interested in working with the PCA in identifying hazards in the environment and to human health.
Is it McNamara?
Well, if I can follow up, I'm glad you're interested in it. I'm wondering if you're interested enough to take away the folks that are working on the issue that we have now to put them on a different issue. I don't want to lose any more people in these cuts working on our issue and the concern that the constituents have. You're not going to take anybody away. That's my question.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, no, we are not.
Thank you.
But can you say that again, please? I'm not sure everybody heard that. I think it's a really important point that we're not talking about taking people away from fluorochemical risk assessment in this bill.
That is correct.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, just to be, it's a huge issue that we need to be working on. But in terms of our chemical policy overall, what Mr. Hine said is this is trying to do more of a hazard-based rather than a risk assessment approach, saying there's chemicals that we should be trying to move away from and finding better chemicals. And it is a philosophical change in our chemical policy, one that I think would prevent negative impacts on our environment and on people. And hopefully we don't have as many of these cleanups and concerns with our groundwater from manufacturing chemicals to put in products. We take them out of the product and we clean up the whole line of chemicals in the upstream in terms of, as you're pointing out, chemical exposure isn't just on the product end, it's on where it's manufactured, where it's dumped, it's the waste that's created. And I think that's an important point when we think about risk assessment of exposures at the end of a product versus the waste that goes into our waste stream and the waste that's created to create that product. So I appreciate you pushing on that point. We need to be taking care of it, but we also need to be preventing those things from happening in the future. And this bill tries to take a first crack at doing a small step in that direction.
Okay. Any further comments or discussion with this amendment? Well, if not, the 840 amendment as amended is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Now part of our bill. Okay. Is there a Mullery here? No. Okay. Representative Hulls, do you want to take your amendment? You showed that to me this morning.
I have a list of a bunch of them, but I can...
851?
They haven't passed it out, I don't think.
Okay. Can we get the 851 amendment passed out, please? Sounds like you had worked on that with a lot of agreement, so...
Well, Madam Chair, I worked on it, and I spoke to many of the members of the committee and got a sense that they might change their vote slightly. Basically, it was the Severson Amendment yesterday dealing with youth camps, and what I did is introduce the amendment. Basically, what it says is for-profit youth camps. So that way, Snoopy may be charged because that's a for-profit endeavor, but the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts would not be. I know myself, Representative Purcell, and I believe Representative Saylor have youth camps that are for profit, like Concordia Language Village and some of those, so they would still come under this umbrella. And I know the Department of Health is not thrilled with this, even though I've changed it, but I think it's the right direction to go. And I'm going to even add to the fact that it's for the kids.
Senator House, do we have any fiscal impact from this?
No, I do not.
See if there is one.
Madam Chair, I'm sure they will give you a fiscal impact, but bear in mind there is no charge now.
Right, so maybe
so they are increasing and getting more money. They're just not going to get quite as much.
Do we have an estimate at all from the Department of Health? Be very brief. If you do, fine. If you don't, fine. Just want to know.
Madam Chair, committee members, Craig Inkham and John Stein. The issue with Representative Howell's amendment, I think, is that at this point we don't have the numbers of which camps are for-profit and which camps are non-profit. We would still be required to do all the inspections on all the camps. And so if we exempted a subset of the camps from the fees, namely the non-profit ones that's described in this amendment, the fees on the for-profit camps would rise to cover that cost. The cost of the program is the cost of the program, and we set the fees accordingly.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, in deference to the Department of Health that has to protect their division, their bureaucracy, whatever. When I managed this camp for 10 years, I have to go back and tell you that the health inspector would go from resort to resort to resort. They do non-profit resorts, and they do one youth camp that was non-profit. Now, they're raising the fees on all these inspections to begin with. That's going to cover that one trip during the day they might make to a non-profit youth camp. And they may make two trips to for-profit youth camps. I really don't think this is going to hit their pocketbook hardly at all. This is very small in the scope of things, and I would appreciate your support.
Thank you. And can I just say, we're going to vote on this amendment. I hope that you will still come forward eventually with a fiscal note so we can look at it. Oh, Representative McNair.
I just have a real quick one. So, Representative Howes, are these for-profit, do they teach the youth like how to balance a checkbook and how to make money in business?
I have an answer for that. They grow up and become employees of the Department of Health.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, the amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the A51 amendment is adopted. Thank you. Next amendment. Representative Mullery here? I guess not.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
I would be ready for A32 if you would so desire.
Next one, that's fine. Trying to get those legislators who are in other committees.
Madam Chair, I move A32. It's an enabler bill that you're a co-author of.
Yes, that's right.
It doesn't change their fee structure. It doesn't add or take away. And basically, it just requires the department, it's self-explanatory if you read the four sentences, reflect the actual cost of administering that program, and fees must not be increased to cover the costs associated with investigating allegations against uncertified hearing aid dispensers. And I could give you a long history of why this is and why it happened, but I don't think...
How about a short history? Really short.
I did give a short explanation as to...
Are there comments or questions from committee members? No? If not, the Representative Howes renews his motion that Amendment A32 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The A32 amendment is adopted. Do you have any more, Representative House?
I have A35, if you'd so desire, Madam Chair.
All right. Let's do the House amendment.
Okay. I would move that A35 be voted affirmative into the bill. This is telling the Department of Health that with the new positions they're going to put on, and I believe it's 32, but I've also heard 26 FTEs, so whatever that amount is, that they have to hire from within our current crop of state employees, or at least hire a state employee that has been furloughed within the last 12 months. The governor is asking state employees to freeze their pay, take 48 days of furlough over a biennium, asking them to do many, many things. And we're downsizing government to some degree. People are losing their jobs. They have to go look elsewhere. I would rather that if we're going to hire more people, we at least hire them from the current crop of state employees. And if it requires a little bit of training, so be it. But I think we need to at least protect the employees that we've had for years. And that's what my amendment would do, Madam Chair and members. Madam Chair, I am going to ask for a roll call vote on this one. Sorry.
Roll call, send me questions. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I applaud Representative Howes' the spirit of this offering. I think this is a great. There's great intent behind this. I did speak with representatives of the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees. I didn't get a chance to talk to AFSCME, and they too applauded the spirit of this offering. However, they do have contract language regarding recalls. Their concern is that this could be confusing and maybe even contradict some of the collectively bargained recall language that they've been using for years on this issue. that they would prefer that this be left to a collective bargaining arrangement between labor and management. So that's I tend to agree with him on that from my personal experience. I think that we should leave these terms and conditions of employment like this to collective bargaining arrangements.
Madam Chair? AFSCME or MABE, neither one have come to me and discussed their disagreement with this amendment. This does not affect the bargaining agreement whatsoever. It just tells the Department of Health to hire from within first before going elsewhere. This does not affect the bargaining agreement. And I would appreciate your support. And I would tell you that if the AFSCME or MAPE come to me later and say they don't like it, I would be the first to move it out in finance. But I think it's a good thing to do. We need to protect our employees as best we can.
The discussion? Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think my concern is that the Department of Health, Representative Powers, has some pretty specialized positions. It would be my assumption. And so what would happen if, for say, one of their scientists were furloughed or that's the position that they wanted to hire and the current crop of employees didn't have that expertise and it was more than just being retrained from one system to another, one database to another, but some actual an actual skill set that the current crop didn't have? How would the Department of Health handle that under your amendment?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I wouldn't expect the the Department of Health to hire a school teacher or custodian to fill a position held by a scientist. If there's not another scientist within the state employee ranks or recently furloughed, then they would have to go elsewhere. And maybe it needs a couple of words in here to say, first, go to the state employees. And let you, but I didn't have time to get that in there. That is my intent, is that they first go to someone working in the Department of Education or Human Services somewhere might want to come over to the Department of Health and work there rather than where they are now. It might even be just logistically, geographically. I think first that's where they should go. I don't want to interfere with a scientist versus stenographer or a clerk or a receptionist.
Okay.
That's not my intent.
Representative Hayden?
Madam Chair, yeah, that, I think I could support it as long as I felt comfortable that what Representative House has said now, that would happen, that this seems to be very narrow in scope, that they would look at the current crop of employees, and I'm just very concerned that they may not line up the way that they're supposed to, so maybe there's an oral amendment to this.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, if I were to withdraw this for a few minutes and add a couple of words that actually staff is already writing on and then bring it back, would that help the committee move along?
Yeah, Madam Chair,
I'll withdraw that amendment for a while.
I'll withdraw the amendment. Okay, next amendment. Representative Mulley is here. Let's go ahead and get his bill before us. Representative Mulley? We'll move the 841 amendment. Representative Mulley, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
841 amendment.
Is this the postponement one?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this passed three committees unanimously.
Can you speak a little more into the microphone, perhaps?
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, this bill actually has complete support from all of the supporters of the mortgagers and borrowers and also of all the lenders, because it works to both benefits, which is very rare in this situation. Passed three committees unanimously with complete support from everyone. I think that Representative David said in his 17 years here he thought one of the most effective props was when I use three pins, which is very inexpensive props. But basically, all this bill does is when you have a mortgage foreclosure sale, you start the mortgage foreclosure here, or do it reverse so that you can understand it from your view. That's when it started. Then they have the sheriff's sale at this point. And in this period here, the mortgagor can reinstate by just paying up the arrears. Then 6 months later, under present law, there's a redemption, and that period ends. But during the redemption period, you have to pay the entire mortgage off. So unless you have a rich uncle or something that dies, you're not going to ever pay that off and still retain the house. So all this does is allow the mortgagor to move out an additional 5 months to sheriff sale so that they have 2.5 times roughly as long to pay up the arrearages, and then the redemption period, which really isn't of any value to them, is reduced to 5 weeks instead of 6 months. And the banks are very happy with it because it actually gets far more people to reinstate, and any legitimate lender wants the money, not the properties, especially now when they've got them sitting around not knowing what to do with it. And in talking to mortgage counselors for borrowers, they say this is one of the most important things, is to allow people to reinstate. They may be off their job because of a layoff at work and they come back, or they may be sick for a few months, they can come back and make up some money, or they can go out and get a new job if they're going to be laid off, and they can pay up the arrearages, and that's all it does. So it's a real simple one. It turned out, basically, I had the idea, and then the Bar Association did a great job of working it out technically so that it all works and fits within all of the issues.
Okay. So there's no disagreement with this bill. Does anyone have a question, comment for the 841 amendment? If not, the 841 amendment is before us. I move it be considered. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the 841 amendment is adopted. Why don't we do your second one?
A33 then?
The A33 amendment?
I believe it's A33.
This amendment was in this committee before, and I think
yes,
you've modified it a bit, Representative Mulray.
Yes, Madam Chair, we took out, you've already heard this, and we've taken out the part that would send your omnibus bill to the tax committee, and we also took out the part for the $30 million in funding, but the League of Cities would still like to have the language in there so that if there is any money available, they can use it to get at the problems caused by the foreclosure. I think,
okay,
I don't know if they're here right now, or there's Way. I don't know if you want, already heard all about it.
We've already heard all brief testimony. Do you want to just come down and indicate your for or against, and then we'll have a chance to vote on this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Wayne Nguyen with the League of Minnesota Cities, and yes, we would support just passing the language of the bill.
Okay. Thank you. And this has been before us, and we had an extensive discussion. Any further discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, I think I might have missed this one. Maybe you could just enlighten me. Is there any requirement for the cities to provide any matching funding or equivalent funding in this particular provision?
Representative Stevenson, there is right on the front section to the matching fund. So cities do bring in their own funds for this program as well. And it kind of lays out what city matching funds would include. So it would be some TIF funds, grants that they receive from organizations, nonprofits, federal funds as well could be city matching funds. So the city would bring money to the table as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any further discussion? If not, the
no.
A33 amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank
and
you, Madam Chair and member.
Amendment is adopted. President Rosenthal, are you ready with your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the A47 amendment.
President Rosenthal moves the A47 amendment.
and this is the Homeless Prevention and Rapid Rehousing Program, and what I'm seeking to do is to make sure that, what I'm seeking to do is that youth programs are more effectively able to apply for these funds, and I think this language accomplishes that.
Okay.
Which one are we on?
Discussion. Does anybody have their money? Okay. Any discussion? If not, then the A47 amendment is before us. Sure. Some brief public comment, that'd be great.
Madam Chair,
welcome to the
And committee members, thank you for the opportunity to provide public comment on this amendment. I've already talked with the author and with the youth providers. Well, I'm the executive director of ELM Transitional Housing and with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless and Integrated Community Solutions. With this amendment, it's not necessary to do it, and it potentially creates difficulties for the Department of Human Services as they are putting forward the substantial amendment to the state consolidated plan to be able to access the almost $11 million in ESD dollars coming to the state. This bill probably, if moved forward as amended, would not be signed by the governor by the time that the substantial amendment would go to HUD, which is May 18th. So this would then come into effect after the plan had already been submitted to HUD. And our concern is that this is going to complicate a very, very tight timeline to have these dollars obligated by September 30th to providers across the state of Minnesota. So at least it's my understanding that the department does not think it's necessary to have this bill, this language. Obviously, you know, I think we want to provide as great a flexibility to the department right now as in the omnibus bill. We are losing $700,000 in emergency services funding, and we're losing $600,000 in emergency shelter funding, and $750,000 in transitional housing funding, and another $760,000 in youth funding. So I think the ESG dollars from the federal level, we need to have as great a flexibility to use that to match up with whatever dollars are actually appropriated on the state level. So I strongly encourage that you do not move forward with this amendment. Thank you.
Are there others in the audience who'd like to speak in favor of the amendment? Just briefly, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kirsten Anderson-Stenberg with the Student Social Service in Minnesota, and would strongly support this amendment. It certainly is the purview of this committee to designate and target the populations that you would seek to target. Certainly, what Ms. Watla-Phillips illustrates is important, and we appreciate the fact that the department has been very open in their desire to fund homeless youth services, and this is simply the opportunity the committee has before it to acknowledge the committee's concern for homeless youth as a population and its desire to go ahead and target. On the issue of the HUD, of the HUD plan, HUD is seeking some very basic information from the state, how they're going to spend administrative dollars, whether or not what the breakdown is between rehousing and homelessness prevention, and certainly the states themselves do have the purview to do just as this amendment suggests, and it is not meddling with either the administration or other kind of high-level, big-picture implementations of any kind of a plan. So, again, we appreciate that Representative Rosenthal has brought this ahead forward and would strongly support this opportunity for the committee to encourage support for homeless youth.
May I ask you a question? You come from Lutheran Social Services, and your preference then would be to target this for a particular group, but do you have the understanding of how the process is done for applying for the federal funds and how whether Ms. Phillips is correct on whether this is actually going to come after the date that the plan has already been sent in and due and sent in.
Madam Chair and members, I do work for Lutheran Social Service, and today I really am serving as the convener of a coalition called Youth Moving Forward that represents all youth-serving programs across the state. And as it pertains to the HUD process, I think that we have a difference of opinion here, and certainly we'd be more than willing to retract any language that would be a detriment. But my understanding at present is simply that, again, it's very high level how the state is going to spend administrative costs, what the breakdown is between rapid rehousing and homelessness prevention, and HUD is not actually seeking the actual specifics, because if you even just take a step back and think about it, that's a lot of information that for HUD to kind of zero in on from every state receiving these dollars, and they're simply not seeking that level of rigor, as all states, many states are in the same process. And therefore, it is the purview of the committee to designate and acknowledge, in this case, the unique needs of specific populations, namely homeless youth.
Okay, and Ms. Summers?
Madam Chair, I think certainly we strongly support the need for housing and services for homeless youth. ELIM is a major provider of homeless youth services, and we think that there needs to be significant dollars to help homeless youth, and we were very sad not to see the one-time money renewed in it. I think that because there's not the clarity in regards to how this whole process is going to move ahead with the substantial amendment, and the substantial amendment is not only the details as was just described, but it's taking our current five-year consolidated plan and amending that. There has to be the research within that plan that says there is a need for this level of funding, and I don't think that we've looked at it close enough. Obviously, I just saw this amendment today to know that we can back this up. So I encourage you to say it's a sense of this body that you want to see money going towards homeless youth, which I think will happen anyway, out of the Homeless Prevention and Rapid Rehousing Program, to specifically say how much and to what size organization, or give some direction that way, is extremely prescriptive, which is not the way this body has dealt with homeless legislation in the past. You've been extremely flexible so communities could design their own program based on the needs of their community. And because these dollars cannot be used for shelter, they cannot be used for site-based transitional housing, which a lot of the youth programs do, besides some scattered sites, I'm very concerned that we are restricting dollars that we need to be available over the next 3 years as flexible as possible. And I think our Department of Human Services Office of Economic Opportunity has done an excellent job in trying to distribute dollars in an equitable way. They've been cited as doing that by the state auditor's office. So I think that we need to trust that they're going to put together a plan that's going to address the needs of all the folks that are experiencing homelessness. And I think if there's a sense from this body that you want to see, you know, money going at least at the same levels that we have now or more towards homeless youth, that would make sense. I'm very concerned about prescriptive language of this type.
And do we have another testifier? State your name.
My name is Mary Orr. I'm with the Department of Human Services. And I just would like to say, to reiterate, that with the federal funding that's coming down, more instructions are still forthcoming. And so I think the more flexibility that the state has in how to use these funds would be preferable. The delete-all bill that's before the committee right now in Article 6, Section 1 already has some direction on where to place priority. This direction is a little more flexible than the proposed amendment A47. And so if the legislature does want to indicate some priorities, the language that's in the bill right now in Section 1, Article 6, would be preferable to this amendment. We are concerned, as I said, about more instructions coming from the federal government that may restrict how we use the funds. And as Ms. Phillips mentioned, there are timelines that we have to meet with the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, and the first deadline coming up on that is May 18th.
Thank you. Any further discussion, members? I would personally make the comment that this is designating $2.5 million of $11 million, I believe, that we're going to get for youth. I think that is way more than we have done in the past, and we have great needs in homeless prevention and rapid rehousing funds for the crisis that we're in at this time. I'm not sure that this is appropriate to, in the amount of time I have seen this bill, which is hours, to make this decision this way. So I will be voting against it. Representative Rosenthal?
Madam Chair, thank you, and I understand your concern. And it's the intent of this bill to recognize the unique and growing need of homeless youth. And I happen to agree with Lutheran Services that HUD requirements aren't being tested in any way by this amendment, but if it makes the committee happy, maybe we can work on it some more, and I pull it for now.
Thank you. Okay, the amendment 847. Representative Hayden, the bill has been pulled. Do we need more discussion?
Oh, did you pull?
Okay.
What?
Okay, thank you. Let's do A28. Who is that?
Madam Chair, did you say 828?
828.
I think that's me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Representative Howard?
Yeah, I gotta get to, sorry, Madam Chair, I gotta get to the right page. I have too many pages to turn. Yeah, Madam Chair, this amendment would, on page 27, delete section 39. And that is fees for manufactured home parks and recreational camping areas. I know what the Department of Health is going to say, so I don't think we need to have them come up here because they're not going to like it, and they'll oppose it, and they'll come up with a fiscal note. But the reason I would like to delete this section, it's very broad. We have, the state of Minnesota is now building camper cabins in some of our state forests, offering them for a very, very, very low price, putting them in direct competition with our resorts, our campgrounds, any private entity that does that. They also, I don't see a difference in here. In fact, maybe we will have to call the Department of Health up, because the way they talk about this, I know of resorts that now have their licenses and fees that they pay. And I know one in my district in Hubbard County that just built probably 50 or 60 camping sites with water and sewer hookups. So they're probably now, all of a sudden, it's brand new. They're going to start having to pay all these fees on top of what they probably pay for the resort. And if you add to that the fact that there are some members of the House from the Rochester area that continue to attack the post-Labor Day school start, which this year, if they were successful, would take a whole week of September out of the vacation idea of anybody in the state of Minnesota going and vacationing in Minnesota. So it seems like it's a constant attack on rural Minnesota while making our state forests and state campgrounds cheaper in competition with our private entities. And that's what this section would do. And, Madam Chair, I would move to delete Section 39. Madam Chair, maybe we could have the Department of Health come up and explain if a resort opens up a new camping area, is this now something on top of what they're going to have to pay, which would even make it double worse.
All right. Brief us on the Department of Health.
Madam Chair, John Stein and Colleen Paulus from the Department of Health, and to Representative Paulus' question regarding Section 39 of the bill. Can you just restate your question, please, Representative Paulus?
Well, I know of a resort in Hubbard County that has been there for quite a while and just expanded, or not expanded, added a bunch of camping sites. The reason I know this is they had a problem with the certified plumber's license. They had a problem with the well line, and they couldn't put a lot of problems with other agencies. But now I'm realizing that they're building this. They're now going to be paying a lot of extra fees that they haven't had to pay before, on top of whatever they pay with the resort. So is that broken down? If they already have a resort, are they going to be paying all these additional fees for the camping areas and the campsites, et cetera, et cetera?
Madam Chair, Representative Health, I'm Colleen Paulus with the Minnesota Department of Health Food, Beverage, and Lodging Program.
Is this Ms. Hollis, is it?
Yes.
Could you speak a little more into the microphone, please?
Okay, thank you. The way that the fees are structured is, yes, there's a resort fee. There's also a fee that is for the manufactured home park area, the camping areas. These fees are very small. They have not been raised since 1991. And included in the Section 39 is also standards where currently we've been applying these standards for special event recreational camping areas through variances, and it's become a current practice, and so we would like to reflect that current practice in law so that we're not always issuing variances, and that the fees are appropriate for the uses that they are having on their properties at this point in time.
So, Madam Chair, a follow-up. So now, Moondance Jam and Eel Pod Festival and whatever else is in my district, Moondance Jam has camping there pretty much year-round. They have different events. Are they then charged on a yearly basis for that, or when they have Moondance Jam in and of itself, because it's a special event, they're charged again for that? And have they been charged before? What's the increase from two? I don't see an existing fee here.
Madam Chair, Representative Howes, when there is a year-round camping area, there's a fee that's calculated for that. If there is a special event that expands the camping site, then those additional sites are added to the license, so the license would be amended to a special event. So the way that the fees are currently is that we charge per site.
But, Madam Chair, do the witness, what were you charging before all this new underlying language? Madam Chair, I guess the answer I'm looking for, I'll give an example. With hotels and motels, the current rate, besides the license for the hotel or motel, was $8 per bed. Department of Health has a bill floating around, I'm not sure where it is right now, that increases that from $8 to $10, which is a 25% increase. And there are other increases in different areas where it's either from 25% or to 50% increase. And I'm trying to understand and justify, at a time when we have a huge deficit, in a time when most state governments are trying to hold the line or downsize, we are enlarging the scope of government in the state of Minnesota in one bureaucracy alone, 25 to 50% in some areas. And I'm trying to get an explanation for that, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Howes, we are looking for our spreadsheet to get you the actual number of what the current fee is. The answer to your question of why the fee is being increased is to reflect the cost of the inspections and the work that we do to review the plans when there are special events. Those fees have been in place since 1991.
Madam Chair, I was told that the Department of Health does this every 4 years. Is that not correct then?
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Hollis, that's correct. We try to adjust our fees every 4 years. This is a fee structure that has not been adjusted since 1991 on the recreational camping areas.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Hollis,
still 25% on some areas and 50% increase is still too much for that. And we're making it tough tougher and tougher all the time on our private entities that are trying to make a buck, trying to survive, while at the same time the other another branch of government, the DNR, is giving away free campgrounds and free campsites and $13 a night instead of $30 a night. It's just, we're competing against our private citizens, and I think it's wrong. And I think I still want to move this amendment and delete this section and have the Department of Health come back with some more modest fees that we can add in finance committee or something.
All right, I hear you. Let's try to, you made your point. I think you did a good job. Now we're going to call somebody else and keep going here.
All right.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. I guess Representative House seems to have a much better handle on these issues than I do. What I'm trying to figure out is, it almost sounds like, Representative House, you're saying that this is somewhat arbitrary, the way that they're growing and they're backfilling or supplanting versus, and I guess what I want to know from the department, I know that they're deep in their spreadsheets trying to answer your question, but I guess what I would want to know from the department, whoever can answer, can you talk to us a little bit about the fees and how it, do you have more work? Does it cost more to do? Do you have substantial growth? How do you substantiate, is it just simply inflation, but how do you substantiate the increase in fees, I think is at the root of the line of questions that Representative Howes had, and for a novice like me who doesn't understand how this works, kind of why. And then the second thing that I'd like to know is, can you give us just a small understanding of what you do when you go out and inspect, so I can get a sense of what the service that the state is providing for its citizens are as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I'll try to be quick in responding to that. The fee increases are built around a number of factors. Some of them are inflation related. The cost of our staff, the cost of driving around the state, the cost of maintaining records and information about facilities that are licensed in the state. There are roughly 25,000 to 30,000 licensed facilities in Minnesota when you look at food, beverage, lodging, and campgrounds, and manufactured home parks, etc. So there's been substantial increases in the cost over the years. And additionally, there have been increasing standards and requirements for review at our licensed facilities, which leads into what do we do when we make an inspection, when we license a property. First of all, there's record keeping in terms of documentation of the owner's responsibilities. Do they have all their business materials in order? Do we have their ownership and residency information, etc.? We then, when we, most people think of the bulk of the work as inspections and reviews of plans. There's been a significant increase in the review of plans related to kitchen facilities and licensed restaurants, as well as swimming pools and hotels. In addition to that, then, we review the plans and assure that the plans meet the requirements for current engineering standards. Then we make inspections after facilities are constructed to assure that they're properly constructed, and then assure safe operations of those facilities. So in a campground, for example, there are a number of sanitary conditions that are subject to review, spacing requirements, issues related to public safety in terms of ingress, egress of vehicles and emergency personnel, water safety, food safety, if food is being served as part of the facility. So there are a number of concerns that we would address.
Representative Saylor. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Stein, I just would be curious if you have any suggestions, what suggestions you might have for covering the increased cost to the department for delivering the programs that are required, other than through fees.
Madam Chair, Representative, we don't have any suggestions in that regard. These programs are funded, have been traditionally funded by fees, and we have historically some general fund dollars that supported some of these activities. We also had federal funds that were once available, those have gone away, that helped us do some of our more general responsibilities related to environmental health and sanitation. We don't have another suggestion at this point, Representative.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
Mr. Stein, I guess one of the questions I'd have for you is, have we lost some lives in some of these parks? Have we had people that are sick? Are we, are we having major problems with these areas that we're requiring this this oversight?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, that question, it sort of begs me to give my story about public health protection, which is an ounce of protection is worth some undefined quantity of cure. And avoiding the outbreak is our job. Our job is to ensure that food safety, facility, sanitation, and other concerns never rise to the level of a significant event up to a death. There have been outbreaks associated with campgrounds, associated with recreational youth camps, associated with restaurant facilities. Our agency tracks all kinds of possible outbreaks on an ongoing basis, and they are in the dozens per year that we investigate and work with facility owners to eliminate any potential sources of risk that may be present in the way food is being handled, in the way that lodging services are being provided, swimming pools are being operated, and so forth. So our job is to work at the front end to avoid the kind of bad outcomes that would lead to death or serious injury.
And follow up, Madam Chair.
And
just to that point, how many are we adding FTEs to this provision by increasing these fees?
Madam Chair, Representative Severson, yes, we are.
How many FTEs are we adding?
If you go in total across our fees, I believe Mr. Aiken will fill me in, 23.
And Madam Chair, just to that point, I think I would support. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just support Representative Howe as much. I understand the urgency or the need for some of this particular oversight, and I understand that we as legislature often overtask our agencies and don't give them the funds. I believe that in a time of a $6.4 billion budget shortfall, the wrong thing to do is send a message to the rest of our taxpayers that we're going to increase government and we're going to increase government oversight. And just ask you to reach in your pocket and dig out more money. I would support the House Amendment.
Okay, the Representative House Amendment is before us. Any further? Representative Meckmer.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Assistant Commissioner Stein, if we don't adopt this amendment, then you won't be able to hire as many new people to do these inspections. Would that be true?
Madam Chair, Representative Meckmer, that's correct.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I'm going to ask for a roll call. I think we have to set some examples here where we have to control ourselves. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay. Roll call has been requested on the House Amendment. Vote no.
Bly? I'm sorry. I just came in.
The A28.
Well, why don't you listen for a minute or check it here,
please.
And we'll come back so you know what you're voting on. Okay.
Hayden? House?
Aye.
Huntley?
No.
Lane?
No.
McFarland?
Aye.
Ackman? Morgan.
No.
Rosenthal.
Aye.
Baylor.
No.
Scott.
Aye.
Severson.
Aye.
Representative Bly. No.
Being 6 ayes and 7 nays, the amendment is not adopted and does not fail. Okay. Page has an amendment. Can I get a copy of it? This This is the 846 amendment. Committee members, this is an amendment that will require a little bit of discussion, so I want to give us have a chance to look at it here. I'll move the amendment, the 846 amendment. You got it? Everybody got it? Okay. What this amendment does is it takes $1 million from the homeownership fund and puts it to the challenge fund for the biennium, $500,000 each year. And I expect we'll need a little discussion on this. It was suggested by folks in the previous committee, a couple committees back, when we were talking about the impact of the bill. It was suggested that we needed to put some more money into the challenge fund, and there were a couple of options that were suggested. This is one of them. We're not doing both of them. And I presume we should probably hear from anybody who supports it and then anybody who opposes it. The members who want to speak in support of the amendment. Okay, do I have anyone who wants to speak in support of the amendment? I'll talk a little bit about why it's before us then, I guess. The discussion was that we are cutting funds to the challenge fund under the current proposal significantly, and since it's an important job producing fund, that we would try to replace some of those funds by a partial removal of some of the funds from the homeownership fund. The rationale being that in this time the homeownership fund is not being used as much as it normally might be in a time of better economic opportunities for people to buy homes. So this is a maybe a little bit difficult amendment to talk about. I want to just hear from the department. I'm sure they'll have some concerns about it, and just see what members prefer to do. And I'm wondering if there's Ms. Blankenship from the department.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, regarding this amendment, first of all, on the homeownership assistance fund, it actually would hurt it, I would say, more than ever to take the money from it currently, with down payment requirements increasing and folks struggling to get into homeownership. To take away the assistance for down payment assistance would actually hurt homeowners more for first-time homebuyers to use our mortgage products for first-time homebuyers. We couple the homeownership assistance fund with that. And so by decreasing the amount available, it's more difficult for a first-time homebuyer to have that down payment to get into a home. In our last quarterly report, the homeownership assistance fund actually ended with a negative unobligated balance. There is a higher demand for it currently. The last quarter repayments were only $181,000. It is a revolving fund. But by decreasing the amount available to it, you not only decrease what's available to current homeowners, but also in the future, what revolves back in and what's available. So this would actually have a big impact, especially on first-time homebuyers. And we would urge you not to support this amendment. I'll stand for questions.
Any questions? That's Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Blankenship, can you talk to us about, there's been some sense that because of the housing crisis and people's inability to get loans, that the utilization of this fund has kind of slowed down. And so I thought that one of the reasons to look at this pot of money temporarily is because you haven't been issuing as many loans, and thus the fund hasn't been utilized to the extent that it had been in the past. I don't know if that's true or false. I'm just trying to get a sense of that.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden. Again, there's a negative balance. It is in high demand. And while production on our loans is slower, it's less because of demand and more because, getting into the bond market was more difficult. So we didn't want to
have as many mortgages. We weren't purchasing as many mortgages, but we still have a fair amount of first-time home buyer demand. And especially as NFT homes get on the market, there'll be a high demand for this down payment assistance. So, intuitively, you might think, well, it's slower. You know, there might be less demand for this, but that's not the case.
Just one follow-up. Mr. Hayden. The only use of this fund is for down payment assistance. Are there other ways in which someone could utilize this fund?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, the Homeownership Assistance Fund is used exclusively for down payment assistance in partnership with our first-time home buyer mortgages.
Thank you.
Are you sure that's the only use for it?
For the Homeownership Assistance Fund?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have been using it for.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, I know that rationale challenge is more flexible. You could use this also challenge for down payment assistance. However, the Homeownership Assistance Fund is a revolving fund, and it also is on, you know, pipeline basis, which makes it more helpful than the challenge fund, which is a once or twice a year competitive basis to get those funds.
Representative Saylor. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like clarification, that's all. Are we still going to be addressing the A34 amendment, or was that dealt with?
No, that was the one that took, okay. Did the same thing, but we talked about two different funds that we would try to have to try to restore that challenge fund, and that one is not before us. We're not going to consider that one. This is a substitute for that. It only says that we would try to see if we can take some additional funding out of the existing homeownership fund.
Thank you for the clarification.
Sure.
Okay. Representative Stevenson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I appreciate the testimony here. I guess my only concern is this, you know, when we have a kind of a glut in the housing market at this point, and we've got some serious concerns about the solvency of initial first-time homeowners being able to stay in their houses in a downturn of the economy. I guess my decision-making process right now says that the people that need to get into the houses are people that have a stable financial situation, and our market generally takes care of that requirement in terms of looking at how much of their spending is going to be dedicated to the housing. So I would see this as a fair trade of going after some of these first-time buyers to make sure that the people that are qualifying for these housing loans are actually market-based buyers and not receiving assistance. And I think the Challenge Fund has this flexibility that kind of gives us this help as well. I understand your argument that it takes away from the revolving fund at large, but I think I would support this motion.
Madam Chair, may I respond?
Sure. Ms. Blankenship.
Representative Stevenson, I understand that we also, many have the monthly payment to afford their first home, but the down payment is often the issue. So by taking back some of this, we're not able to serve as many, I'd say, of the lower income borrowers who are able to get into a home and afford the mortgage, but aren't able to save up that down payment. So those who have a higher income may be the ones who you're serving.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can afford the down payment.
Thank you. Representative Saylor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just like to say I have spoken with a number of people throughout my district regarding the deal with some of the challenge fund, used challenge funds, and some of these other funds that we've discussed here with regard to this. And, you know, they have indicated to me that, you know, since not everything can be funded, that they would prefer the challenge. And so I do support this amendment, you know, knowing that it's, you know, not the best of all possible worlds. You know, we would like to be doing other things and actually fully funding a very good program. But if we can't fully fund all of them, I guess based on information from people that work with these programs in my district, I'm going to support this amendment.
Any further discussion? If not, Amendment 46, A46 is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no?
No.
Motion to prevail, the amendment is adopted. Next amendment. We're getting there, members. We only have five left.
the chair's going to have to leave. Finish this one up. Yeah. Paul, let's finish up your amendment.
I'm sorry, 835.
Let's not have a lot of discussion, please.
I'm going to explain it only for the two members that were not here. Huntley and Bly were not here. And Hayden can't leave yet because he's my one strong supporter. Madam Chair, I need to amend, Amendment 835. Well, if the way they wrote it on here, they have to amend the amendment and then we do it.
Why don't you get it in the right form so we can have it all written and then we'll consider it, okay?
Okay.
They're passing out.
We got a final form before us? We do or we don't? Representative Howes, do we have what you want or not?
Staff tells me it's right, so I guess I just have to move 835.
Okay, so...
But I would explain to Representative Huntley and Bly that we're not here what it does. It just asks the Department of Health if they hire more employees due to the fee increases that they set a priority for existing state employees or ones that have been laid off in the last 12 months. I'm the only person from my side of the aisle that spoke on it. There was one member from your side that spoke against and one member that spoke for it. That's where we left off, and I took it back to rewrite it a little bit. So that's my...
Okay, thank you. Representative Morgan?
And I'll just renew my comment that I appreciate Representative House's sentiments on this and his efforts to rewrite it. I did speak with a representative from MAPE who indicated that they would prefer that this be left to collective bargaining.
Okay. Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative House, I thought that we were going to take a look at this to make sure that it gave... You wrote, the Commissioner of Health must give priority to current state employees or to former state employees who have been laid off in the last 12 months. But I thought the crux of this was to make sure that the Department of Health, we weren't going to hamstring the Department of Health in hiring laid off employees that may not work, that may not be on the same status as the ones that were laid off. I'm not articulating that very clearly, but I thought that the part that I wanted to look at is that if you took a microbiologist or whatever they have, that they couldn't be hamstrung by having to hire a data analysis person because of this amendment. And I don't know if you wrote that here.
Madam Chair, Representative
House,
that's the way it is. The department tells me they already do this. If they need an attorney, they will look through other state agencies for an attorney. This would only say they give priority to an attorney that works with a state agency. They wouldn't hire a custodian to be an attorney. This is not what it does. It's just priority is given to a state employee that would be qualified to fill that job. That's all. And they already do it. I would just like to see it written down that they do it.
And Madam Chair, I guess the problem is that I wanted to support it, but I'm also now starting to look at Representative Morgan and MAPE and the collective bargaining agreement, and it sounds like now we're starting to... I'm trying to figure out language that I can't figure out what's their current process, et cetera. So, I'm sorry, Representative Powell, I probably can't support this as written, and it's probably, in hindsight, much more of a rookie mistake that maybe we're getting into something that is a little more micromanagement than what we should probably be doing here.
Madam Chair, Representative
Powell, last comment?
Let's just vote it up or down and get
okay,
out of Dodge.
Okay, sure. That's what we'll do. Yeah. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no?
No.
No. The motion does not prevail, and then it's not adopted. Okay, four left. Next one, 20. Does anybody want to offer 20?
I'll be back.
That's McNamara.
I'll offer.
Representative McNamara moves a 20 amendment.
Madam Chair, this is in the spirit of the vote we had a little earlier where we had a roll call on this is an opportunity again to reduce the fees, cut the cost of government, and I think save our constituents some money. And Madam Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Roll call's been requested. Any further discussion of the amendment? Representative Morgan, did you? Okay. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, members, I would strongly recommend that we support this amendment. I'll have one that's even more drastic coming up here, but the bottom line is we are asking agencies to create efficiencies. We've also tasked agencies with unfunded mandates. There's a happy medium somewhere in between. This kind of cuts to that. It takes half of the fees away that are being considered here, and I think it would hopefully cut down about half the FTEs, try and rein in a little bit of the growth that's taking place and a huge deficit, and I would ask for your support on this provision. If you can't vote for this one, you probably won't be able to vote for my next one either.
Okay, the amendment is before us. All those in favor? Oh, we have some, sorry, we have a roll call vote. Okay, on the 820 amendment. Okay, votes no.
Benson. Bly.
No.
Hayden. Out. Huntley.
No.
Lane.
No.
McFarland. McNamara. Morgan.
No.
Rosenthal. Saylor.
No.
Scott.
Aye.
Severson.
Aye.
There are seven no's and four yeses. No? What?
Seven,
that's
seven,
it.
Yeah.
Seven no's and four yeses. Motion does not prevail. Nothing. Okay. Next one. A38.
That's my amendment, Madam Chair. And I understand that if we can't get 50%, we're probably not going to get 100%. Members, again, I think the message we're sending from this committee and this bill going out is going to be everybody else has to cut except us. And so with that, I'll have a closing argument. I withdraw my amendment.
Okay, thank you so much. Amendment is withdrawn. Number 39. Yes, Madam Chair. And that belongs to who?
That would be mine.
Okay,
sure, thank you.
Representative Scott, move the A39 amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Does everybody have it? Yeah, I'm looking for it. I don't have it.
This amendment, Madam Chair, would modify the requirements to the Department of Health to allow, rather than mandate, a contract with a nonprofit to provide parents with parent assistance to families with children who are deaf or have a hearing loss. It modifies language to ensure that parents provide communication and support by offering their experiences and not medical options. And my concern there, again, is that we're changing the language from allowing to mandate, or from a mandate to allowing, trying to get away from mandates. And also, the language there that talks about the parent-to-parent conversations, the parent-to-parent counseling that would take place, it should be just changing the word to personal medical experiences rather than having the parents sound like they're giving medical advice to one another.
Any discussion? Those any pros or cons from the audience? Okay, if not, the Scott Amendment is before us. Pardon? The 839 Amendment, yes. All those in favor signify saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Last one, members. A29 amendment.
I think, Madam Chair, that was my amendment also.
Representative Scott? I'd
like to move the A29 amendment.
Representative Scott moves the A29 amendment.
My concern with this portion of the bill was that it, we prioritized three entities to receive, to have priority over the federal dollars that we're going to be receiving from the federal stimulus package. And I just wanted, my reasoning for this was just to make it a little more flexible for the department, make it more flexible so that our priorities can align with whatever may come down from the federal, that may be tied to the federal money.
Okay.
So it would leave the some of the discretion open to the department rather than placing them within a box.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion from committee members? Any compelling discussion from the audience? If not, members, I'll just say that I would oppose this amendment. This, these are the kind of priorities that a committee can give to state government to help us utilize those federal dollars in the way that we understand are really needed, and there is discretion here, so I would urge a no vote. Scott amendment is before us, the A29 amendment. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I suppose no. No?
No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments to come before us? I guess not. Okay, so the motion before us is that House File 2150 be recommended to pass as amended and return to the Finance Committee. Discussion on that motion. President Stevenson, I think you said you wanted
to. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. You know what? As you're going through the bill, and I would bring your attention to page 7, line 722, and we've got to underline a facility with radiation therapy accelerator. We're talking about a new registration fee of $500 here. And then as you go through the bill, there are a plethora, cafe, of new fee increases. And in terms of employment, this is a great government job employment jobs bill, but this doesn't do anything for the taxpayer who is under a burden out there, dipping into their wallets, trying to keep their job, and trying to help us match a $6.4 billion budget deficit. Members, this I understand, and I never question the heart of the chair in this committee. She has a huge heart and has concerns for the citizens of the state of Minnesota. However, we have people out there who are just trying to make ends meet. We have business people who are trying to keep people employed. In the private sector, they're cutting their businesses back by 15%. And we're responding with this bill by growing government, Department of Health in particular, by about 34 FTE positions. We're going in the wrong direction here, members. And as if we're going to get this budget deficit fixed, we're going to have to join hands together and all sing in the same spirit, reduce government. And so my hope is that as this bill goes forward, that it gets crafted down. I'm not delusionary in the hopes that we're going to defeat this bill and go into renegotiations. However, I do appreciate, Madam Chair, your effort in this bill. You've done a tremendous job as the staff has done putting this together. And I think we had a pretty good hearing today, got a lot of the issues out. And I would, at that, Madam Chair, request a roll call.
Thank you. Roll call has been requested. Representative Huntley.
Well, if I could just respond to that, Madam Chair, there's an 8% reduction in funding for the Department of Health from the general fund in this bill.
Correct. And let me just also say, I want to thank all the members of the committee who've worked on this. This has been a lot of work, especially today. There was a lot of give and take, and I really appreciate that. And I would just say, in support of the bill, that we have made some cuts, some of them reluctantly, because we know we have some good agencies that are not going to have the kinds of resources that we might have had. We've also increased resources for these committees, both with some of the fee increases that the governor has asked for and that we've said okay. And we've also targeted some of those programs so that we are now going to be looking at, for example, a couple of other things that have been asked for a while, the colorectal cancer, the cancer registry, which makes me certainly very happy. Some of the issues with funding for homelessness, we've put in funding here for long-term homelessness that was going to be missing and for which we would have had people in the streets who are now in our homeless, long-term homeless facilities. We've dealt with some additional money for our homeless youth. We've tried to, I think, balance some of the job creation that I think was spoken to just a few minutes ago by Representative Saylor, that our folks out there really do want some of our housing programs to not only create housing but to create jobs. And Representative Stevenson, I just say one of the things by restoring the, at least most of the challenge grant fund, we are taking a lot of carpenters and other people off the bench, putting them to work. Those are folks who we know really help stimulate the economy with this bill. And I hope that we've been wise in trying to target some of the federal stimulus money towards those folks that are most needy in the parts of our budget that haven't taken care of them before. We've expanded the URAP program statewide. We've looked at children's toxic products and are trying to have more awareness about that and about some of the other toxic exposures. We're helping those folks who are the little ones with hearing aid screening and hearing aid dispensers. We tried to do some adjustment to some of the fees, on a bipartisan basis. Sometimes we have and sometimes we haven't. And I just want to say I recognize that this is an ongoing effort. The bill isn't done. We have to go to finance, and we'll see what happens there. But I do know that everybody has put forth a lot of effort here. You stayed a long time today, and so I'm going to wrap this up and just say that I want to say thank you to all of our staff, our health research, Daniel Lemire, Emily Cleveland, our fiscal analyst, Emily Adrians, kept here really late, I know, a couple of times, Melba Ratke for DSL Research, Danny Nadeau, from our GOP research, Jake Johnson and Brooke Woodson, who you all know have done a fabulous job for this committee. So I want to just thank you all for this, and we will take a vote on this bill, and we'll see each other as we keep going the rest of the way, and it's been a great committee to work with. So the House File 2154 is as amended to be returned to finance. Although, we don't have a roll call, do we? We do have a roll call. Where will the court call the roll?
Chair Clark?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Lai?
Yes.
Hayden?
Yes.
House? Huntley?
Yes.
Lane?
Yes.
McFarland?
No.
McNamara?
No.
Morgan?
Yes.
Rosenthal? Saylor?
Yes.
Scott?
No.
Stevenson?
No.
Nine yeses, four noes, the bill does prevail, and it's passed, and honestly, it's a finance. Thank you again, committee members. Oh, excuse me, wait a minute. Before we can adjourn this committee, we do need to pass our minutes, approve our minutes. And Representative Benson, I see you looking over there anxious.
Chair, I have the meeting is moved so carefully.
I have your...
And I would like to move them, please.
Some of the interesting part of the day. So the amendments are... the minutes are April 17th, 7th, and April 14th. Any discussion on the amendment? If not, on the minutes. All those in favor of approving those... Two minutes, say yes.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted and the meeting is adjourned.